Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, founder of themuslimguide.com, and civil rights lawyer Arsalan Iftikhar. They're with us in Washington, D.C. Lester Spence is associate professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. He's with us from Baltimore. And with us from our bureau in New York is deputy managing editor for the National Review, Kevin Williamson. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, what's up?
Okay, can I get some caffeine up in here? What's good?
Go blue.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Well, you know what? We're all hot to talk about Rand Paul showing up at Howard University and on this show. And, of course, we'll get to that. But let's get things started with some music from country star Brad Paisley and LL Cool J.
Oh, it's music? Is that what it is? Oh, okay. It's called Accidental Racist. It's a single from the country singer's latest album, Wheelhouse. And here's a sample.
I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag and I think you wish I wasn't here.
It's the whining.
If you don't judge my durag,
Southland,
I won't judge your red flag.
Trying to understand what it's like,
yeah.
Not to be.
Ay, caramba. In the immortal words
you
know,
of
Byron
it.
Crawford, author of Infinite Crab Meats, Status Ain't Hood. Thanks, Michelle. Yo, okay. Kevin Williamson, what do you think of this?
God, that's horrible to start with. But I'll start with a disclaimer that I hate the fact that I live in a world in which I'm expected to care what Brad Paisley thinks about anything, especially relations. You know, country singer, deep thoughts, thanks 21st century. But the thing that's really crazy about this is the presence of LL Cool J on this, which is kind of the, my black friend school of record producing. It's like when someone's going to tell you a racist joke and they always say, well, my black friend told me this joke. You know, it never works the other way. Back in the 90s when Public Enemy was celebrating Farrakhan in their songs, they never, like, felt the need to include Pat Boone.
but they did. They did rock with Anthrax for a remix of Bring the Noise. And, you know, this isn't unprecedented. You know, Kenny Rogers, he messed around with Coolio. He did that song. Also, Jennifer Nettles and Rihanna. There's Jason Aldean and Ludacris.
Jason Aldean, who raps himself.
Yes, and every one of these was horrible.
And Willie Nelson and Snoop Dogg. You know what? Here's me. I think this is something that looked to me, even to me, really good on paper. But it's all in the execution. And rap music and country music, I don't know. I don't know if we have a mix that makes sense there.
Is it the genre or is it the words?
It's the genre. Oh. The genre. You got something that's inherently urban clashing against something that's inherently rural. Those two narratives don't, in my mind, have any mixture.
Hold on, let the good doctor in here.
Go ahead, man.
Hold on, no, this isn't a genre thing. This is just a suck thing, right? Because you take Snoop Doggy Dogg's Gin and Juice, there's a heck of a bluegrass remix that's hot. That's super hot. So there are a number of different ways you can take rap and make it work with country, raise and make it work with jazz, but it's just a content issue here. I think if Paisley really wanted to get down and really wanted to understand how racism works, he could have chose a number of more powerful lyricists than he chose LL Cool J. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cool J should really stick to NCIS.
Ooh. On behalf of white Southern guys, I'd like to object officially to the conflation of country and bluegrass there, though.
Oh, and yeah, noted, sure. Duly noted. A Train, Arsalan Iftikhar.
Yeah, I'm going to have to channel my inner Charles Barkley and say that this song was terrible. what I think hasn't been noted here, and really should, you know, if you look at the lyrics of the song, basically, Brad Paisley, you know, equates the Confederate flag basically just with Lynyrd Skynyrd fanboyism. And I find that to be a rewriting of history, you know, to think that the Confederate flag or, you know, wearing it on a T-shirt, having it as a bumper sticker, you know, only originated with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And I do agree with the whole LL Cool J thing. As a comedian, W. Kamau Bell said that I'm not sure if LL Cool J has spoken for black people since Mama Said Knock You Out. So, you know, these are some things that I don't think they really thought this through. I think it was a very tone deaf song. I think instead of Accidental Racist, it should have just been called an accidental song.
Well, at least he tried to put something positive out there. You know, I take issue with the idea that LL Cool J is irrelevant. He's an elder statesman for sure, but I take some issue with that. I like I said, I think this looked great on paper. I think they messed it up in the execution. And I want somebody to be brave enough to try this again, but maybe not as preachy.
Well, and he could have picked a Southern rapper like Big Boy or Andre 3000 from Outkast, other Southern rappers, as opposed to picking a rapper.
I don't have any problem with the choice. It's just the execution just didn't work.
There's no problem with preaching. I don't think the problem is preaching. We love preaching.
Amen, sister.
We love preaching. The problem is when it's stupid or when they. I'm sorry.
LL has even backed away from
the obvious comparison here, which is that, if you're a white guy and you see a guy wearing a Malcolm X t-shirt, right, what do you think about it? Well, for some people, Malcolm X is a guy who's a symbol of self-respect and pride in that. For some people, he was a member of a crazy racist cult. Mm. The Southern Confederate flag is very much the same thing. Where I'm from, you see black guys who wear Confederate flag hats or have Confederate flag bumper stickers on their trucks. For some people, it means, it's a regional pride thing. It's a sort of rebellious thing. And for some people, it means exactly the sort of poisonous, wacko, racist stuff that people up here in New York associate with it.
You know, I credit you on that.
And
this is what LL said on – LL was on – it's interesting that Jay Leno has heard from both Brad Paisley and LL Cool J on this. And LL Cool J said, look, for some kids, wearing the Confederate T-shirt is like – wearing a Memphis Grizzlies jersey, except that there's no Malcolm X t-shirt flying on the state house, on the dome of any state house in the country. Mm-hmm. And those Confederate flags never flew on those tops of those state houses until the Civil Rights Movement. So this is why when people say, oh, this is just heritage. Well, if it was heritage, why is it that none of those flags were there until the Civil Rights Movement came to those states, when those flags were deliberately incorporated into those state flags as a statement of political belief? And so that's, I think, where – but I do credit you. There are a lot of kids who – there are a lot of kids wearing X hats around who don't know anything about him. So is that.
Yeah, during that
– So let me just ask you this one more question, and then we want to sort of move on.
Yeah, sure.
The argument that they made is that, okay, no song is perfect, but if they got people talking about it, then it's a good thing. Yes, no?
Agreed.
Arslan?
No. Agreed, but for all the wrong reasons.
Lester?
Talking about what? No. You don't need
Okay, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. God knows we don't talk about race enough in this country. What we really need is another song to remind us. Thanks.
You're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, civil rights lawyer Arslan Iftikhar, political science professor Lester Spence, and Kevin Williamson from the National Review. Well, everybody's awake now.
Well, thank goodness, finally. Thanks, Michelle. So, as it turns out, LL and Paisley weren't the only ones trying to get that ebony and ivory flavor going on. Republican Senator Rand Paul, he was in town, tried to put his best foot forward with black voters. But some folks, he just put his foot in his mouth. He spoke at Howard University, the famous historically black university in Washington, this week. We got some tape. Let's drop it.
I mean, how many of you would have, if I would have said, who do you think the founders of the NAACP are? Do you think they were Republicans or Democrats? Would everybody in here know they were all Republicans?
Yes.
All right. You know more than I know. And I don't mean that to be insulting. I don't know what you know, and you don't, I'm trying to find out what the connection is.
Oh, man. that's like the white guy that walks through the club and wants to know if you know what Trans Europe Express is. That's awful. So, Michelle, you talked to Rand Paul after he went to Howard. How did he do there, and what do you think he... what did he have to say to you?
Well, you can if you missed the interview, then you can go to npr.org and catch up, and I hope you will. But
right.
I just wanted to point out one thing that editor Ahmad Omar did go and was listen to the speech along with the students, and he talked to a number of Howard students afterwards, and a lot of them applauded Senator Paul for showing up, and he told us that he had solicited that opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Senator Paul did, even if they didn't, love every aspect of his speech. I do want to – if you don't mind my pointing out, there were a number of sort of interesting – statements that I think, you can say is you're making too much of it or not making, but not knowing Ed Brooks' name, for example, wanting to point out that, the first African-American senator post-Reconstruction was a African-American, but not knowing his name when you have a printed speech, that kind of stuff.
Problematic.
When you have staff to pointing out, talking about how brave you are to be there at a university. Really? Why? I mean, why? Because
his hubcaps are going to get stolen.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of, I don't
any
know.
Any conservative speaking at any university.
Go ahead.
is sort of brave, though, unless it's, you know, Liberty or something like that.
Yeah, but if I were to go to Liberty, you know, would I start my conversation by talking about how frightening the people are? I don't think I would.
It's like, you know, people at the Oscars always talking about, you know, how brave they were to make this movie or that movie. Okay. Like, we're going to hang people for making dumb movies.
I mean,
Rand Paul's main problem was that he underestimated the quality of undergraduate education in this country, which is almost impossible to do. And that's the real shocking thing.
What does that mean? The fact that these students actually know more about history than they do?
You know, I mean, Howard actually has a pretty strong curriculum on that kind of stuff. They have a required class in African-American history. The students actually are going to know these things. You know, normally you can pretty safely assume that an American undergraduate is not going to know anything of any importance, but at Howard, you're going to be wrong about that.
And they would also know the past 60 years of political history in this country that – go ahead, Lester.
Go ahead, Dr. Spence. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, so it's not that he's making assumptions about undergraduate education. He's making assumptions about black people's knowledge. Now, what we have to do is understand that these efforts that the GOP is undertaking actually aren't for black voters. I think the research is pretty clear. They do these because the optics look good to middle-class white voters they're interested in attracting. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that his speech, it worked on the assumption not that undergrads didn't know, but that black undergrads don't know what their history, and that black undergrads don't know what their own preferences are, right? So the whole idea is, well, if we just expose them or inform them, you know, then maybe their ideas will change. Well, no, black people have a very clear understanding of where their political interests are, and they do the best they can to meet those interests. And
speech that if you expose someone to your ideas, you might change some minds.
You know, K-Dub, there's something.
No, it doesn't work like that.
There's something to that old that old black saying. You know, you don't walk to the front of the church; you wait to get called. You know, and I think it was Ghosh, but in some ways, I don't know if he deserves a pat on the back, but I'm glad he took the initiative to say, hey, I want to come talk. But
I don't know if I agree with that kind of wait to be called. I think that's the opposite. I think that's one of the things that people, particularly, I'll just speak for African Americans because I've sort of thought a lot about this piece.
It's your turn
appreciate
today.
Is somebody acting as if they respect you enough to talk to you to your face as opposed to behind your back, which is the normal way.
He clearly didn't know his audience. So all that said, he clearly didn't know who he was talking to. A-Train.
Final thought?
Yeah, I think it is interesting, especially in light of the fact that, you know, he had that recent epic 13-hour filibuster on the floor of the Senate against drones during the confirmation hearings of CIA Director John Brennan. You know, I gave him props for the drone filibuster, even though I disagree with most of his politics. And I think it was a good thing that he went to Howard. I do agree with Lester that it probably was more for the optics on a national scale. Obviously, you know, he was elected as a Tea Party member of the Senate from Kentucky, where my wife's from. But now to sort of get himself into the mainstream of the Republican Party, I think that, you know, this was something that he did as a politician that many politicians don't do today.
And we know how the Pauls love doing things conventionally anyway.
Right.
Okay, well, before we let you go, you heard about this. Did you hear about this? That the musical super couple Jay-Z and Beyonce, and nobody ever talks about them, right? They went to Cuba recently, and it happened to coincide with their fifth wedding anniversary. There are some political leaders like Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, of course, wanted to find out how they got around the strict rules about Americans traveling there. The Department of Treasury responded in a letter that we obtained that the trip was okay because it's our understanding that the travelers in question travel to Cuba pursuant to an educational exchange trip. It's not at all unusual for artists and entertainers to go you know, back and forth.
Yep.
Not to be outdone, though, Jay-Z released a diss rap in his own response about it. Here it is.
I'm in Cuba. I love Cubans. This communist talk is so confusing. When it's from China, the very might of the music. Idiot win, the Bob Dylan, the rap music. You're an idiot, baby. You should become a student.
Wow.
The
okay.
Rock.
Okay, Lester. You wrote
he's
a book
Bob,
about this. Go ahead.
He's not Bob Dylan, but that's what a lyricist sounds like, right? Mm-hmm. LL needs to take lessons.
Here we go.
Like real talk.
Well, Kevin, what do you think about it? What do you think about the trip?
Okay, another celebrity whose political activities I'm expected to care about. But the educational end of the educational exchange doesn't seem to be doing much good for either side. You keep in mind that Cuba is a country in which it's mortally dangerous to be a librarian, a country in which HIV patients are locked up in prisons. And, you know, he went down there and allowed himself to be used as a political prop for a really, truly awful regime.
Hmm.
And I think he should be ashamed of himself.
I think that's one interesting read of it. But it's not like he was on camera, you know, with with a sombrero on his head and drinking a piña colada.
The Cuban press.
But what about that?
But there is some.
What about that? The fact that the press is not. I mean, his. You know, you see the point that he's making in his rap, which is, well, he hadn't observed that China was particularly free either.
Mm-hmm.
But what about it, Jimmy? I mean, as a writer yourself, what about Kevin's point?
You know what? As a writer, I'm going to Cuba. I'm gonna put that on the record. Every writer I know has been to Cuba. I'm late. And I think more black people should go to Cuba. Don't take the news' word for it. Don't take the newspaper's word for it. Go see it out. I think there's this thing where a lot of African Americans are afraid to travel abroad. And Jay-Z, he got clearance from the Treasury Department. Is like, right. who else permission does he need? You know, I'm really offended that we believe that we can check the travel habits of rich black Americans. Nah. Go ahead, A-Train.
Awesome. Well, yeah, and like you said, Jimmy, you know, this was fully sanctioned under the Treasury Department under their people-to-people educational exchanges. There have been ballet companies that have gone there. You know, the Buena Vista Social Club has gone to Cuba.
That's right.
You know, you're not going to – you don't blame an entire population for what their government does. You know, we had Dennis Rodman a few weeks ago chilling with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. You want to talk about, like, you know, rubbing shoulders with despotic leaders.
I don't recall that we were particular fans of that.
Well, no, we weren't. But what I'm saying is I don't think that it caused the faux uproar that it is today. And, you know, for many young Cuban-Americans, you know, many of them would think that the Bay of Pigs invasion were the opening act of Mumford & Sons at the Coachella Festival.
Mm.
Okay. Lester, final thought?
Cuba has far better health care than ours. I think there are a lot of other nation states that we should be questioning. And I think that this type of interaction is a good thing for the states, for both nations.
Amen, brother.
All right. Well, thanks. It's good to get all the different views. And we say goodbye to our headquarters here. This is our last barbershop.
Yep.
This is the last time we get a trim in this particular location. Next
yeah,
time you will hear
been
us
here.
From our new
one. Yeah,
Kevin,
that's
too.
My fault.
Well, Kevin, do you still get a trim? My man?
I do it myself.
You do it yourself. Okay, well, next time you'll have to see us in the new building.
New digs.
Jimmy Israel is a writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College, founder of themuslimguy.com and civil rights lawyer Arsalan Iftikhar here in Washington, D.C. Kevin Williamson is deputy managing editor for the National Review with us from our bureau in New York. From Baltimore, Johns Hopkins political science professor Lester Spence. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Peace.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday from our new headquarters.